I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Have you ever used the Uber car service app? The San Francisco-based firm is one of a number of rideshare companies that have been moving into large cities and giving traditional cab companies some competition. Some cities are pushing back. For instance, last year, the Philadelphia Parking Authority, which regulates cabs and limousines, kicked Sidecar out because it used unlicensed drivers and cars. We'll be talking to the authority's general counsel later in the show. But first, we begin with Emily Badger. She's a staff writer at the Washington Post, where she covers urban policy. Wrote a piece last month called Taxi Medallions Have Been the Best Investment in America for Years. Now Uber may be changing that. And Emily Badger joins us from the studios of the Washington Post. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
I'd like to just get a definition for those people that have never heard of or never used Uber. Let's deal with Uber first, and then I do want to talk about what you write about in this piece, which is about medallions and taxi cabs. But how does Uber work?
So Uber is a four-year-old company. It was launched in 2009 in San Francisco with initially a service that wasn't quite as controversial as what we're going to get to in a minute. Initially, they were just offering rides in black town cars, which were essentially akin to kind of an upscale cab ride for people. And this was sort of upsetting to a lot of incumbent taxi companies in cities. But the issue that has really become problematic for Uber and for a lot of cities that they've moved into is that they've expanded into offering this service called UberX. And what UberX does is it basically turns anyone with a car and a driver's license and an auto insurance policy into a driver for hire. UberX says if you have a Prius and you don't have a chauffeur's license, you're not a professional driver in any sense, you can still give rides to other people because we will give you an app, we will give you a phone, we'll help you connect with each other. And it's this sort of notion of people who are not licensed, people who are not professional, people just driving their average cars around, that's really become problematic and posed all kinds of regulatory problems for cities because these people are offering a service that looks a lot like taxi service, but in so many other ways, it's not a taxi.
And that's where cities like Philadelphia and others are pushing back on some of these car share services.
Right, exactly. There are a number of cities, and Philadelphia is one of them, where some of Uber's services are allowed, but UberX is not. I think you can still get a black town car ride in Philadelphia, but what you can't get in Philadelphia is a ride just from anyone with their station wagon or their minivan picking you up.
But would you say that even looking at Uber, UberX, that these new startups, these new companies are giving taxi cabs, the traditional taxi cabs, much more competition?
I think they're absolutely giving them more competition. I mean, Uber would argue that they're not necessarily taking away passengers from taxi cabs, that a lot of times they're creating new demand that didn't exist, that perhaps these are people who would never have taken a cab and now they're going to take these alternatives because they're cheaper, because they're easier to access. I suspect that there's some of that going on, that in some sense they're increasing demand, they're creating demand that didn't exist before. But I absolutely think it's true as well that a lot of people who used to take traditional taxi cabs are using these services instead because they find them more convenient, because it's automatically tethered to your credit card, because you don't have to worry about calling a cab dispatch, because it's just the way that they've set up this app is so streamlined. It's very consumer friendly.
Very convenient for consumers.
Exactly.
Your piece is about a number of things, including just the price, the value, the cost of a medallion. And I have to say, when I read about that, my jaw dropped. Places like New York, a taxi medallion, some have topped $1 million. In Boston, $700,000. In Philadelphia, $400,000. What does a medallion give to a taxi cab driver?
So a medallion is a license to operate a taxi cab. It's not quite the same thing as a chauffeur's license, which gives you the right to drive a taxi cab. It's the thing that basically says you can operate a business running a car around town, picking people up for hire. And not every city has a medallion. Philadelphia does, Chicago, Boston, New York, Miami. These are the sort of big cities that have them. In a lot of other cities, a permit to operate a cab is just like a permit to operate anything else, perhaps a permit to operate a barber shop or to get a liquor license. But in the cities where these medallions exist, they have become this really sort of unusual creation in that a medallion is a akin to a piece of property. If I obtain one from the city of Philadelphia, it gives me the right to operate a cab. The right to run that business is extremely profitable. In a city like Chicago or New York, I can sell my right to operate that cab to other people. There's essentially sort of a third-party market that enables people to trade these things, and that's partly what's contributed to making them so valuable, as you mentioned. So in Philadelphia, a medallion was worth about $50,000 in 2005. Today, it's worth about $440,000. So these things have just become astronomically more valuable in the last decade or so, as demand for riding cabs has increased, as the supply has remained really steady. And fundamentally, Uber poses a really sort of basic threat to this regulatory model that's existed in cities for decades.
The idea that perhaps these high prices won't hold if Uber moves into a city?
Right. Well, the medallion system is fundamentally based on the idea that a city says there will be only, say, 7,000 cabs operating in the city of Chicago, or there will be only 12,000 cabs operating in the city of New York. This is the idea that cities have created sort of kind of an artificial cap on the number of people who can provide this service. And they did this for some fairly legitimate sort of regulatory reasons to protect the public. You know, the idea being that if we don't let anybody drive a cab, then it will be easier to make sure that the people who do drive them are safe, that the cars that they're driving have been inspected. So they're sort of fundamentally tied to this idea that there should be a limited number of people providing this service. But what Uber comes in and says, no, actually, anybody should be able to provide this service.
But can a cabbie make a good living?
Well, oftentimes the people who own these extremely valuable assets that are medallions are not the same people as the cabbies who you would interact with. A lot of times they're owned by investors, they're owned by large companies, and the person who's actually driving you around in a car is probably leasing that medallion and leasing that cab from someone who owns it. And all of this is extremely heavily regulated by cities. So in Chicago, for instance, a cab driver might have to pay $600 or $700 a week to someone who owns a medallion for the right to lease it. And that means that the first $700 that he earns from people driving people around, he hasn't made a single penny of profit yet, because all of that is just the cost that he has to pay to obtain the medallion. So this system has, I think, made it harder for people who actually drive cabs to make a lot of money, just because the system is set up for them to have to make some pretty big payments to people who own these medallions.
You're down there in Washington, D.C., and you wrote about Chicago. I'm here in Philadelphia, and having taken cabs in a lot of cities, many of them are immigrants. Does that tell us something about who cab drivers are these days, and perhaps even how they view the system?
I mean, it's absolutely the case in cities all over the country that increasingly the workforce that drives cabs is made up more and more of immigrants. And I think that says something about the fact that the livelihood that you can make doing this activity has gotten harder and harder as these medallion systems have sort of eaten into the amount of money that people can make, as the regulatory burden has become so steep. I mean, this is increasingly not a job that a lot of native-born people would opt to do. And for that reason, in New York, for instance, I mean, overwhelmingly, almost more than a majority of cab drivers there are foreign-born. And, I think that's because these are jobs that are accessible to them, and they're also jobs that perhaps other people aren't interested in doing.
It's a hard job. I mean, driving a city, waiting for rides, hoping to make that $700 that you have to make before you even begin to make some money.
Yeah, it's an extremely hard job, and I never really thought about this until I spent some time riding around in Chicago talking with cab drivers, but it's physically difficult on your body to sit in a car for 12 hours at a time, and I think that's something that we can all relate to if we've ever been on a very long road trip, but the thought of doing that every day, it's physically demanding. I think they deal with a lot of safety concerns, not knowing who's getting into the back of the car, on top of the fact that they're constantly dealing with these financial concerns as well.
Let me make sure our listeners know the phone number here to join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We're talking about how people are getting around cities. We're talking about taxi cabs, Uber, UberX, a rideshare. And again, we want to know how you get around a city and what you think about some of these new rideshare companies that are coming into some cities, although some have pushed back as well. And again, Emily Badger has been covering this for The Washington Post, where she covers urban policy. Are you seeing more pushback coming from cities? I noticed a piece in the New York Times today in Uber reduces New York car share fares. The fact that Uber perhaps is getting more competitive and wanting to take on cab companies?
You know, when Uber first started entering cities about 4 years ago with this service, it was not entirely clear if what they were doing was legal or how cities would react to it. But Uber's strategy all along has been, let's just go into cities where we think that they'll be hospitable and sort of see what happens. We'll let the regulators catch up to what we're trying to do. And initially, it was easier for them to do that because what they were doing hadn't grown to such a scale as it is today. But as it's gotten bigger and bigger, it's become harder for regulators to ignore. It's become more disruptive to the entrenched taxi industry. And so what we see today is that Uber is in this whole sort of suite of fights in cities all over the country and in states where they're trying to work out regulation in Seattle. They've done regulation with the Public Utilities Commission in California. They're dealing with the governors in Arizona and Colorado. They're dealing with the mayor in Chicago. They're dealing with the Taxi and Limousine Commission in New York. I mean, what we're talking about, sort of ground transportation, is fundamentally something that's not regulated in Washington. It's regulated by all of these local entities. And so Uber has to sort of find its way with every single one of them. And what we've seen, particularly over the last year or so, is that some of them are really receptive to this idea. They can see that consumers like it, cities want to support it, and other cities have been really hostile and said, don't even come to town with this thing. If you do, we're going to impound the vehicles of people who are providing this service. We're going to fine them. We're going to issue cease and desist letters to you as companies. And so we've really seen a wide range of ways that cities have responded to this service.
So imagine a lot of court proceedings related to Uber and some of these rideshare companies.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, part of the reason why I initially went to Chicago was because there was a big lawsuit that's going on there where taxi medallion owners are suing the city of Chicago, arguing that because the city had not been regulating Uber, they were sort of violating their rights to operate cabs on a level playing field in the city. And with that, that's just one of a handful of lawsuits that are out there right now.
We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation with Emily Badger, again, staff writer at The Washington Post. She covers urban policy. And we called her up because we were interested in a piece that she wrote last month called Taxi Medallions Have Been the Best Investment in America for Years. Now Uber may be changing that. We have Taylor Bennett waiting in the wings, Uber spokesperson. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Bad energy habits around the office can affect your bottom line. PICO Smart Ideas for your business can help with customized tips, information, and programs designed to save you energy and money. Learn more at pico.com/smartideas. PICO supports WHYY.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown.
Would you like to see Garrison Keillor live? Well, now you can. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Garrison Keillor, host of A Prairie Home Companion, is coming to the Sands Bethlehem Event Center on Tuesday, November 11th at 7 p.m. Become a WHYY member at the $150 level and ask for a pair of tickets as your thank you gift. Call 1-888-345-9499.
If you want to hang out with me.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. How exactly do you close the U.S. military prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba? A human rights activist says it's perfectly doable.
The administration has always had the ability to close Guantanamo. What it's lacked is the political will to do so.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Support for WHYY comes from the new Wells Fargo Propel World American Express card, designed to bring the world within reach for Wells Fargo customers. Details at a local Philadelphia area branch or wellsfargo.com/propel. Wells Fargo, the world is open. Keep exploring.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Emily Badger about ride-share companies. And joining us now is Taylor Bennett. He is Uber spokesperson. He has been listening in on our conversation. Taylor Bennett, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So what is Uber's goal for its future? Do you want to get into every city in the United States?
Yeah, you know, Uber aspires to be in every city where transportation options just aren't meeting demand. You know, what we do is connect riders with drivers and, you know, get them from A to B. And we want to be in any city that the options just aren't sufficient and there's a demand for new alternatives, safe and reliable transportation. And so, you know, big or small, we hope to meet that demand and get people to where they need to be.
And you are in Philadelphia, yes?
Correct, yes.
I know that Pittsburgh has been a bit of a problem for Uber.
Yeah, you know, I think first and foremost, there's been overwhelming demand from consumers in Pittsburgh. You know, there are, on the rider side, people who have been looking for an alternative form of transportation, a safe and reliable ride. And on the driver side, we're creating jobs. There's economic opportunity for our driver partners to start their own business and you know, make some extra cash on the side. And, you know, that's what we've seen. And we're working with the PUC there, and we're, you know, having continuing conversations to make sure that we can find a permanent home for ride-sharing in Pennsylvania.
What, one of the criticisms has been for things like UberX, where anyone with a car and a driver's license and hopefully some insurance can provide a ride for somebody. And some concerns about the quality of those drivers. Does the car have insurance? Is the car in good shape? What's your response to that?
Sure. Yeah, you know, a couple things. I think, first of all, the safety of our riders and our drivers is our number one priority. And so in order for a driver partner to partner with us and be on the Uber platform, there's a very stringent background process that takes place. It's a both county, multi-state, federal background checks that go back 7 years. A lot of taxi companies only go back 3 and 5, depending on the city. So, you know, ours is industry-leading in terms of background checks and what we look for. And then secondly, on the insurance, we have best-in-class insurance. Every driver partner does need to have their own license and personal insurance. But on top of that, we have $1 million liability coverage that drops down at any instance. And that's from the moment they are on the platform, taking a rider on a trip, and then in between trips. So even if there's nobody in the car, but they're, you know, they're working on the platform, there's $1 million liability coverage there that drops in. So, you know, again, a lot of the taxi companies out there, $30,000, $50,000, whatever it may be on liability, you know, the fact that we provide $1 million is exponentially greater. You know, and then the safety features of the app itself, you know exactly who the driver is. You have his name, photo, license plate. You can track the car and GPS. So before that car even shows up, you know exactly who's going to be there. And so there's a real inherent safety feature built into it, and a level of comfort that you just don't get riding in a taxi.
Do you see, final question to you, Taylor, but do you see taxi cabs and limos and Uber and UberX all coexisting?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I keep saying, you know, we welcome any taxi driver on our platform. You know, I think the fact that we offer such flexibility and greater opportunity to make a living, you know, that's what is attractive to both the taxi drivers out there as well as potential driver partners that we partner with. And I think Emily said it perfectly before, you know, taxi drivers start their week multiple $100s in the hole before they're even making a penny. And, you know, if they can move to a platform where there isn't that upfront fee, there's no startup cost, you know, they set their schedules, they take home, you know, what they make. I think that's very attractive. And, you know, absolutely. We're here to supplement the industry and provide another option, not take it over.
You know, Taylor, hold on, only because we have a caller that wants to put a question to you. Emily, anything you want to add to what Taylor just was saying?
No, I think that was a great explanation of what they're up to.
Let me get Mary from Lansdale to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a friend in Los Angeles who was hit by an Uber car, and it turned out that the Uber car driver was not insured. So I'm wondering what Uber's doing about that.
Taylor, you want to take that?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure what incident you're speaking of, so I really can't talk speculation. But, you know, again, every driver partner we have is has to have their own insurance before they can even partner with us. That's part of the background check and the driving record check. So, again, all partners are insured, and we have a $1 million liability coverage on top of that.
On that note, my thanks to you, Taylor Bennett, for joining us today on Radio Times.
Great. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. He's Uber spokesperson, and Emily Badger staying with us, staff writer at the Washington Post. Emily, one of the things that you wrote in your piece was that Uber might lure away taxi cab drivers. Drivers that are driving cabs today might be interested in working for Uber or being an Uber driver.
I mean, Taylor sort of hinted at this. Some, but Uber is actively recruiting people who are taxi drivers to come drive for this platform instead. And if you rent a taxi from a taxi company or from a medallion owner, but you happen to have your own car at home, Uber essentially says to you, why don't you stop renting that taxi? Why don't you just take the car that you already own, and we'll send you this phone, you can download this app on it, and you can start giving rides, providing the exact same service that you are already providing in a taxi cab, but do it in your own car, do it without making sort of all of the upfront costs that he just mentioned, paying to lease the medallion, paying to lease the car. There are a lot of reasons why it would be sort of financially advantageous to you as a taxi driver to consider driving for the service instead. But on the other hand, I know there are also a lot of cab drivers who have a lot of concerns about, for instance, the insurance issue that the caller just mentioned, whether or not they're going to be as covered as well, should they get in an accident, should they have any issues when they're sort of functioning as independent contractors driving around using this app, as opposed to functioning within the very sort of stringent legal framework of being a licensed cab driver in a licensed cab.
In fact, a caller who works for an insurance company has pointed out that almost all policies have exclusions when people are using their own cars for hire. I don't know how versed you are in this, Emily Badger, but it's an interesting point there.
Yeah, this has been, I think, sort of one of the single biggest regulatory challenges here. I mean, all of these companies say, if you want to provide this service, you know, you need to have a driver's license, you need to show us that you have an insurance policy on your car. But in fact, just about every single personal insurance policy that anyone has, that any of your listeners have, that I have, that you have, probably has a clause in it somewhere that says, if you are driving your car for pay, if you're using it to give people rides for hire for pay, then this entire policy is void. Your personal insurance policy does not cover you when you're using your personal car for commercial purposes, which is, in a sense, exactly what all of these companies are asking you to do instead. So this has created sort of a loophole, not perhaps a loophole, but a gap in coverage in between sort of what the insurance industry has typically recognized in commercial coverage and what it's typically recognized in personal coverage. So this is why Uber says we provide a $1 million commercial liability insurance policy. They're sort of suggesting that, you know, if your own personal insurance policy doesn't cover you, ours will instead. But regulators still have a lot of concerns about this, because the question then arises, well, when does this commercial policy kick in? Does it kick in when you have a passenger in the back seat? Does it kick in once you've accepted a ride and you're on your way to picking it up? Does it kick in the moment you turn on the app? And these are tiny details that are really important, that are a big part of what's being sorted out in regulation at this point.
Well, we are talking about regulation and rideshare services. That's Emily Badger, again, staff writer at the Washington Post, where she covers urban policy. We have many guests in this hour of Radio Times, including Dennis Weldon, general counsel for the Philadelphia Parking Authority, which regulates taxi cabs and limousines. Last year, the Parking Authority kicked out Sidecar because of its use of unlicensed drivers and cars, saying it violated city regulations. And Dennis Weldon, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Let me begin with Uber. Can Uber operate legally in Philadelphia?
Well, Uber itself does not have any type of authorization to operate in Philadelphia. Uber really is essentially an internet application that permits, it's almost like a, it's similar to in the taxi cab world to a dispatcher. You communicate with them and they arrange a service for you. So there is no company named Uber, but the Uber application is authorized for use in Philadelphia by some limousine companies.
So that makes it legal?
Yeah, it is legal.
That's why you're here, just to help us explain all this.
It can be used. Now, you've each accurately distinguished between Uber in Philadelphia and the concept of UberX and Sidecar. When Uber provides service in Philadelphia, they're doing it through a licensed limousine company, through a vehicle that's been inspected and meets certain requirements. The driver has been trained and certified, has picture identification from the parking authority, mandatory insurance standards are met, and the insurance companies actually keep those records on file with the authority. So in Philadelphia, it's really a limousine company that's picking you up using the Uber application.
So why last year did the parking authority essentially throw out Sidecar?
Right. Well, and initially Uber faced the same, exact same problem that Sidecar did. They just kind of came into the city and started providing taxicab service. There's this kind of misnomer out there that these companies are providing what you would call a ride share. And a ride share is essentially when people in a common location are going to some other common destination and they kind of share the ride, they share gas prices, parking, and things like that. That's not at all what this is. This is a business. This is you contact a dispatcher. They send a vehicle to your house. The person driving the vehicle is doing it for money. They're driving around waiting for a dispatch, essentially. And that is taxicab service, and that is limousine service. So Uber had the same problem. They came into Philadelphia and just started providing taxicab service, and they were impounded initially. And then Sidecar did the same thing. And we actually, in both cases, we have an enforcement department, and that enforcement department used the service to see exactly what was involved. And in each case, they were providing illegal taxicab service. No different than if someone decided to just use their family sedan and wait down at the corner at Fifth and Market and take someone on a ride if they wanted to.
A ride for hire. Emily, let me go back to you, and we're hearing from Dennis Weldon, General Counsel for the Philadelphia Parking Authority. Does this have a familiar ring to you, Emily?
Yeah, absolutely. And the point that he raises about the word rideshare is a really important one that I think gets lost a lot in talking about this, simply because this is a new activity and people aren't quite sure what to call it. And so we're all sort of feeling around trying to figure out how we should label it. But there are a lot of people who have been doing what is essentially carpooling for decades. This is not a new idea. This is, you know, I'm driving to work. Why don't you hop in my car and we'll share the ride? Maybe you give me a little bit of gas money. This is sort of traditionally what ride sharing has meant. But all of these companies have in a sense, and I think that this is a pretty savvy marketing strategy on their part, they've kind of co-opted this word that has meant one thing to now describe something that is very different. And that is very much this sort of financial transaction, this commercial transaction where, you know, and this is kind of a recurring theme throughout the sharing economy. A lot of what we're talking about is not literally sharing, it's selling things. And that's a distinction that's important to make, I think.
To you, Dennis Weldon, and then we're going to have to say goodbye to you, but do you think some of these, to use ride share, since it's sort of the word we're talking about or the service that we're talking about, but do you think in a good way it could force taxicab companies to be more modern, to provide a better service, that the competition can up the game for existing cab companies?
Yeah, I think competition is always great for this industry, and regardless of what it is. And I think at the core, this is not a new thing. It is being used in a different way. You use your app instead of a telephone. And it does a lot of other things, the payment methods and tracking on GPS, which are really great, and the public loves it. And I think you're already starting to see that in regular taxi cabs. You're going to see more of it, and if you don't, it's something that the parking authority in Philadelphia will certainly look at requiring for the taxicab service, because the public certainly wants it.
Dennis, in fact, don't go away. I do have a caller for you. This is Sean calling into Radio Times. Sean, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, guys, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment on something I feel like it might have been a little lost in the conversation, and that is the safety of drivers themselves who use Uber, and I guess the benefits to the driver. You know, with the account that's made by the customer, you know, with a credit card and that sort of thing, I think it makes payment easier and more secure, so the driver always knows that he's going to get paid. And, you know, he's kind of working independently, so he doesn't have to go through a taxi company and, you know, like you were talking about before, having to try to make his money back with leasing and that sort of thing. So I think it provides a lot of benefits to the drivers themselves as well.
Well, Sean, I appreciate the call. Dennis, what's your response?
Well, it certainly can. The safety is a major issue for taxi cab drivers. You mentioned earlier, sitting down and driving for a long time takes a toll on your body, but also operating in the city can be dangerous. And that's something that we've taken seriously. That's why these taxi cabs all have panic buttons in them now. They're tracked right by GPS. We actually have a regulation in place that we're hoping to have approved later this month that's going to install cameras in every taxi cab to track who's in the back of them. I don't know that just simply having someone log on to an app is in itself the level of safety that Sean thinks. But safety is certainly something that we really have to focus on.
Well, Dennis Walden, thanks for the call. Thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. General Counsel for the Philadelphia Parking Authority, which regulates taxi cabs and limousines in this city. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Emily, let me go back to you because you also looked like a list of complaints about taxi cab service in that city. And I'm sure, you can find complaints about anything no matter where you look. But nonetheless, it was a pretty long list of complaints, including not being picked up by a cab driver, not being taken to a certain part of the city because they didn't want to go there. Can you expand on that a bit?
Sure. Well, this comes back to what Taylor was mentioning about how Uber is trying to come into cities where the supply is not currently meeting the demand, where consumers don't feel like they're getting the type of transportation that they would like. And I think that this resonates with a lot of people who have these interactions with cab drivers, where you get in a cab in any number of cities and you tell them you want to go to certain neighborhoods and the cab driver says, I don't go to that neighborhood. Or what I did was I asked the city of Chicago to give me all of the complaints that consumers had made over the last 2 years. This was about 24,000 complaints in total, and a lot of them were about things like the car was dirty and the driver was rude, but what I was really interested in was the particular complaints that get at the idea that certain people aren't being served very well, certain neighborhoods aren't being served very well. And sure enough, when you read through all of these complaints in Chicago, for instance, and I suspect you'd find something similar in a lot of cities, you know, there are these patterns that emerge. There are over and over again people who try to catch a cab in downtown Chicago who are told by their cab driver, I won't go to the south side of Chicago. If you're not familiar with Chicago, the south side is the predominantly African-American, the lower income part of the city. Cab drivers regularly tell people, I don't go to that neighborhood. I won't take your credit card. I'll only take cash. I won't take you to the airport because I'm just looking to make a couple of quick pickup trips. And the sort of underlying theme of everything that I've just mentioned is that all of these things are illegal. Cab drivers are required to pick you up and take you where you want to go, regardless of where it is, regardless of who you are, regardless of whether or not you're disabled and you need a handicapped accessible cab. But we can see in complaints, and I hear these stories in Washington and other cities as well, that these are just examples of consumers feeling like they're not served well by cabs.
And that's Emily Badger, staff writer at the Washington Post. She covers urban policy, and we are talking in this hour of Radio Times about how to get around cities, whether you use sidecar or taxis or Uber. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Rider University supports WHYY. Rider invites listeners to learn about how its executive MBA program can help professionals leverage their business experience into greater leadership roles in their organizations. Final interviews for the fall 2014 semester are concluding soon. Info at rider.edu/EMBA or 609-896-5036. Rider University, preparing tomorrow's business leaders.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about cybercrime and cybersecurity with Brian Krebs, former Washington Post reporter who writes the blog Krebs on Security. He exposes cybercrime networks and as a result has also been a target of cybercriminals. He broke the stories about the credit card breaches at Target and Neiman Marcus. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
the language wars.
I saw my friends being injured and I saw their dead body. I don't want to see anymore my friends going to die.
The fate of Afghan interpreters who worked alongside American soldiers, well paid for their services, now seen as traitors in their home country. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about how car sharing, how Uber, it's changing transportation, especially in cities. Emily Badger wrote about this in the Washington Post. She's our guest in this full hour of Radio Times. And joining us now is Ronald Blunt. He's president of the Taxi Workers Alliance of Pennsylvania. And Ronald Blunt, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you for inviting us.
You're very welcome. So can Uber and these car share companies and taxi companies, can they coexist in Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania?
I believe so. I think they have to look at the history and not make the same mistakes. Like, say, for example, after World War II, the streets were flooded with the vets coming back driving cabs. There were so many cabs on the streets where they had to create numbers, permits, and medallions to control it. I think what we might be doing now is overflooding the streets. But if there's a way that taxi drivers and Uber can come up with a hybrid system, I think Uber has a system called Uber Taxi that most people aren't talking about. Something like that may work to save the both industries.
Talking about a hybrid system, let me get Emily Badger in on the conversation. Is that something you've heard in other cities? I guess the idea of Ubers and Uber, I guess Uber and drivers, taxi drivers, in a sense, coming together?
Well, Uber Taxi is a service that that is not as prominent as a lot of the other things that Uber is doing here. It only exists in a handful of cities. But essentially, what it does is it allows you to call an actual registered, licensed cab driver in an actual cab in the exact same way that you might call a black town car or that you might call someone who's just driving a Prius to come and pick you up. And this is an idea that's not at all sort of problematic or offensive to the cab industry, because basically this is Uber just sort of layering an extra dispatch service on top of cabs that are already operating. And a medallion owner looks at this and says, you know, we're perfectly happy for our cab drivers to use Uber to pick people up in their cabs, because that just helps the driver make more money. That just ensures that the driver is able to pay his lease fees. And so to a certain extent, some of what is going on here, just the basic idea of a dispatch service, is something that could coexist with cab companies. It's something that cab companies point out that they already do. There's some other services, such as an app called Halo, that allows you to do something like this. And I've even talked to medallion owners in Chicago who've argued that, you know, the ultimate end goal that they would like to see here is to just have Uber become a technology company that licenses the app that they've developed to cab companies. I'm pretty sure that Uber is not going to agree to that, but that would be an example of the type of hybrid arrangement that he's describing.
Is that what you're talking about, Ronald?
Well, What's happening in Philadelphia just with Uber Black and the taxi? So there's a when Uber doesn't have to work for their drivers, they sit at hotels, they extort the doormen and stuff like that. So the streets are becoming flooded with both taxi cabs and Uber. So it's going back to that situation of World War II where the streets are just flooded and it's a race to the bottom for both Uber drivers and taxi drivers. So there has to be a system where there is a control on the numbers, but the running public becomes the customers again. Because, as Emily pointed out in one of her articles, the way the system is now, the taxi drivers are actually customers. The medallion owners, the dispatchers, actually don't care whether you get one customer or not, as long as you pay your lease at the end of the day. But under the Uber system, the running public actually becomes the customer again. So that's what, from TWA point of view, we was looking at a hybrid version where you can control the number where drivers are making a living, and the driving public becomes the actual customer, so everyone, so the system survives.
Ronald, I'm curious about, it, for especially in Philadelphia, what does a taxi cab driver have to make? I mean, what is that lease per day for them before they start making some money?
It is really crazy. The Parking Authority gave out a report that drivers are making under $5 an hour. They're working 12 to 16 hours a day. The leases on the cabs are really crazy, and because there's like five drivers per one medallion, the medallion owners are overcharging the drivers for rookie cab. So drivers, I mean, I think Teller talked about it, that the drivers from the taxis are shifting over to Uber because of this. I mean, it's a short-term fix, but, you know, yeah, so drivers are, they are, it's really bad for them. The situation is horrible for them.
And you're saying that some of these cab drivers are going over to Uber just because they feel like they can make more money over there?
Right, and they don't have to deal with the exploitation. They know they're not going to be overcharged. They know they're not going to be over-regulated by the parking authority. They know that they can work in peace, you know, so they go over there.
And you feel over-regulated by the parking authority? Too many sort of nickel and diming going on?
Right. So, I mean, like, you go out there, you forget to put a collar shirt on, it's a $250 fine, a ball tire, $350, any little thing can take your day's pay away from you. And then when you get back to the garage and pay your lease, man, they're overcharging you. You got to buy your vehicles from them. The insurance that they hit us with is crazy. So drivers are really suffering. So as I said, like, they're actual customers of this medallion taxi system.
You know, we have a cab driver, Mohammed, called Ronald. He said that he's enraged by Uber, saying that it's a problem for him and his business, and he thinks it's a ripoff of customers as well. Do you agree with Mohammed?
I don't really think Uber is a ripoff. I mean, they're price surging. Yeah, there's something to be said about that. I think it's a fair deal. I mean, if the driver goes out and there's no business, Uber doesn't get any cut. I mean, they take 20%, so if the driver makes money, they get 20% of that. If the driver doesn't make a penny, they get 20% of that. So at least the driver, I think the playing field's a little level there. But with the leasing system, whether you go out and make money or not, you still got to come in and pay the $100 for your lease.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. I just think Uber does open the door. I think Uber creates opportunities for drivers. I just think that there has to be a way that they both can coexist or come together.
Emily, anything you want to add? Then I want to get Aziz to join our conversation. Emily?
Yeah, well, he brings up this really interesting question about sort of what happens when anybody can do this. What if we flood the supply? What if there are, you know, thousands of people who are out driving around their own personal cars, and they're each, you know, driving for only a couple hours a week, giving just a couple of rides. I mean, I think it's an entirely legitimate concern to worry. In that type of environment, will it be impossible for anyone to do this job full-time? Will it be impossible for someone to work this job 50, 60 hours a week, make a full-time living at it? And I think that, you know, for cab drivers who are going over to the system and sort of throwing their lot in with it, that's kind of the gamble that they're making. In some ways, this could potentially be very beneficial to them, but the downside is that, you know, if they support this new sort of world order where anybody can do this, is that increasingly going to make it difficult for them to do this job full time?
Let me get Aziz to join our conversation. Aziz, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My name is Aziz, and I want to add, just to make this industry and the next level, is to make the driver happy. When the driver is happy, so he provides you with the best service. Right now, our drivers, as being a driver with a taxi and being a driver right now with Uber, I'm very happy, and I'm one of the top drivers in the city, and I provide all our customers with the same level of customer service. And this is a point that is missing in this industry, that everybody was complaining for years and years that the taxi industry needs some change. And we know that, for example, the city of Philadelphia advertises a lot to attract more customers for us and for all other industry, and dealt in the hand of someone who's not happy driving a taxi and give you a bad customer service, which gives you a bad idea about the city. So right now, the cab drivers have been abused for a long time ago from those medallion owners. Mm-hmm. And right now, Uber came and gave them the chance to be your own boss, to be your own guy who can provide the best customer service. The fact that the PPA is involved, it's very important, because the PPA is the balance in this industry in our city. Without the PPA, even Uber does not exist, those cab drivers will be suffering like they've been suffering from years from those medallion owners, because they add whatever they want anytime they increase the lease. And you have to know, this industry in the beginning starts with a gift from the city to do the medallions. Right now, the medallion is over $500,000. How won't you, the cab driver, can have his own freedom by owning his own medallions?
Well, you know, Aziz, first of all, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. You put a lot of stuff on the table and some important stuff as well. Let me give Ronald Blunt a chance to respond. And he says he was a cab driver. Now he's an Uber driver. He's a happier driver. I'm assuming he's making more money, and that a happy driver makes for a happy passenger, makes it good business for the city. Is he right, do you think?
Right. So, I agree a short term what Aziz was saying. I mean, you know, like they get away from the medallion owners and stuff like that. But in the long term, we got to look at also what Uber and stuff too. Uber is not just, satisfied with drivers driving these cars. Eventually, they're going to want driverless cars. Eventually, Uber is going to want to enter other markets like delivery service and stuff like that. So, I mean, eventually, I mean, under Uber, I mean, 10, 15, 20 years from now, there's going to be no drivers. I mean, it's just going to be the app and the vehicles. So that's one. That's long-term thinking. Short-term thinking, I think that I see this right, the drivers are getting some relief that we're in full up. You got 5,000 drivers playing musical chairs on 1,600 cabs. But some of them going over to Uber, it relieves that tension and stops some of that exploitation. But it's short-term. Again, I think that we have to all come together, Uber, Sidecar, Lyft, the PPA, medallion owners and drivers, and come up with a way that this thing can work, long-term for everyone.
Well, Ronald Blunt, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. He's president of the Taxi Workers Alliance of Pennsylvania. Emily Badger staying with us for the rest of the hour. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Emily, though, what we heard from Aziz was, you know, pretty stark comparison between what it was like to be a taxi cab driver in Philadelphia and what it's like to be an Uber driver. And he's obviously much happier being an Uber driver.
Well, it really sort of depends on the medallion situation. I mean, I've also met some cab drivers in various cities who own medallions themselves, who literally are, you know, small business owners who have bought something that was worth $50,000 a decade ago, and now it's worth a tremendous amount of money, and they're planning to retire and sell it, and they're going to live off of that retirement. And so, you know, it depends on your situation is very, very different as a cab driver if you're leasing someone else's medallion or if you own your own one. And I suspect that if we were to talk to someone who owned their own medallion, they would feel very differently about, you know, which system is better and what they're hoping will happen in the future.
Let me get Nicole to join our conversation. Hi, Nicole. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I travel for work, and I was introduced to Uber. I'm a consumer, so I was introduced to Uber on the West Coast. On the West Coast, so travel by taxi can kind of be, for lack of better words, a little on the corrupt side. Sometimes they don't take credit cards. They want to drive you to a Mac machine.
Really?
I've had that happen to me in L.A. and different parts of California a number of times. So when I was introduced from a coworker to Uber, it opened up a whole new world of possibilities to me. And then back on the East Coast, I live in Montgomery County. And we travel, you know, we go into Philly for a show or for dinner quite a bit. And when I come out of the show, I don't want to stand on a corner with 30 other people and try and hail a cab in the rain, or walk a few blocks off the main beaten path to hail a cab. And Uber is just so convenient. There's a rating system for myself as well. And so as I rate an Uber driver, they rate me as a consumer.
Yes.
And that's wonderful, and it is all prepaid, you know, through the credit card that you have on file with them. You can change credit cards very easily. I'm not saying that, you know, as a business person from the taxi side, I can understand the conflict, but there's a shift in society and what the consumer is demanding, as with any service in our culture. The industry has, you know, service industry has increased. So you need to provide a better service. And not that Uber needs to take over, but if the taxis are going to still be relevant, well, I think that they really need to see the direction that this is going and adapt.
Nicole, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And what we heard from Ronald Blunt is the taxi services want to adapt, but it's an interesting comment. Emily, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, it's really striking to me that you never hear anyone say, I had the most amazing experience hailing a cab and getting a cab ride to the airport. But you always hear people talking about, you know, just at a cocktail party or at a bar or at work, you know, I had this terrible experience. My cab driver was really rude. I watched 5 cabs drive by me while I was holding my hand up and nobody picked me up. I mean, I think Uber is really tapping into to this thing that the caller just mentioned, which is, you know, consumer dissatisfaction with the taxi industry is really, really deep rooted, and it exists not just in Philadelphia, it exists all over the place. And that is precisely why Uber's business model exists, because so many people feel that way.
I have had good rides with taxi cab drivers. I just want to put that on record there. But Emily, I just want to quote something you say. We have no time to talk about it. It's in Wonk Blog today. You say we have taxi drivers pitted against amateur chauffeurs, hotel chains against homeowners, incumbent businesses with legitimate gripes against micro entrepreneurs trying to make money in ways regulation never envisioned. The idea that this sharing economy is really taking over in many ways and pushing against regulation in a lot of traditional businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just created so many interesting points of tension and conflict where what's particularly interesting to me about it is that I often feel like it's not clear who is the bad guy and who is not the bad guy. You know, and what we've been talking about, is the Uber driver the bad guy? Is the cab driver the bad guy? What about the medallion owner who, you know, doesn't want to lose all of their money? I mean, I think all of this is really sort of morally ambiguous.
Well, on that ambiguous note, my thanks to you, Emily Badger, for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. And she's staff writer at the Washington Post, where she covers urban policy. And again, a piece she wrote last month called Taxi Medallions Have Been the Best Investment in America for Years. Now Uber may be changing that. We read that article, and that's why we did today's show. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.